Well, like, that was one of those moments because that was birthday money for him and Genevieve. So Genevieve got her report card and we're like really proud. So we said, all right, well, let's go spend your birthday money. You can go buy a present. Mm-hmm. So we go into Big W and they've got their ultimate toy sale on. And we literally walk on past all the toys and the thing. And then I head up to the back just to see what kind of board games they have on the Big W shelves these days. And Ted walks up with me and goes, ooh, this one. And walks straight up to Connect Four, grabs it and says, Dad, can I get that one? And I went, absolutely, you can. Like, why not? Like,
that's cool.
And I was like pretty, yeah, it was like one of those proud dad moment, I have to admit. It was one of those moments of like, oh, he, like, granted, it's more the balls than a board game. But the fact that he walked past everything else, though, and was like in the board game section and went, no, I want one of these things, was, I think, a big moment. So. Okay. Well, let's get into it, shall we? Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to episode 39 of the Board Game A Gateway podcast.
Is it 39?
It is episode 39. Sure. How dare you interrupt me in the introduction spiel?
I'm just making sure we're not making mistakes here because we're super professional.
You're a bit naughty today because we finally got the third person back. We have another third person. Ralph, hello, sir. Welcome back.
Hello. You can hear my laugh on the record tonight.
Yeah,
absolutely we can. My name's Neba and I'm your host for this evening. That was Ralph who was speaking just then. And to my right, the naughty boy is Mr. Damien. Hello, sir.
Hello, hello.
And we are your entryway into the world of tabletop gaming, board gaming and fun times. If this is the first time that you're listening to the podcast, we do welcome. It's lovely to have you here. We talk about board games and all the fun stuff that we've been getting up to. This week we are going to be having a chat about a few different board games. We're going to be having a chat about 51st State. We're going to be having a little bit of a talk about Too Many Bones and Beyond the Sun. These are our three big games that we've been playing throughout the week. Three big games, but we'll make them quite easy for you to digest. Bite-sized pieces, if you will, I guess. You know, snackable, I guess. And then we'll be closing out the podcast with our gateway game of the week this week, which is Love Letter. And actually, we've been playing, what was my Christmas gift from you guys? The Love Letter Star Wars Jabba's Palace.
Jabba's Palace. I actually got it as a gift from my brother as well, and he really enjoys taking it out and playing with everyone, so it's pretty cool.
Yeah, no, it's a lot of fun, and we'll get to why it's a fun game towards the end of the podcast. If you're watching this on YouTube, you can skip through the podcast. You can use the timestamps. Actually, on your podcast app of choice, just click on the timestamp. You can jump around to the games that you are interested in listening to. Hell, we'd love to see you stay around for the whole thing. But look, let's get into what we've been playing this week. We're going to start with you, Mr. Damien. We're going to have a chat about 51st State.
Yeah, so 51st State is a game I picked up a little while ago. Specifically, it's 51st State, the master set, and I'll dig into what that means shortly.
Ooh, that sounds like there's a lot here to dig into.
Yeah, oh. A bit of BDSM, as it were.
Yeah, well, maybe.
We don't talk
don't
about
know.
The subset. That's a bit of a weird set.
Yeah.
That's an expansion.
Yeah, exactly right.
Well, the thing is that they released an ultimate set, so I don't know what comes in that one. Now I'm curious.
Oh,
okay.
No.
But 51st State is an engine builder or a tableau builder style of game where essentially every single turn you are drafting cards and you are getting resources and you are using those resources to either convert into other resources or using those resources to then play cards in front of you, which then allow you to get more resources, play more cards, get points, so on and so forth.
I just want to say, to like a gateway gamer, and you saying resources about 8 times in that sentence, you can kind of pick up what type of game this is.
It does feel very, very Euro-y from the start.
It is very Euro-y, but here's the thing. It's honestly, it's Wingspan, but in the Neuroshima Hex universe. So the Okay, so the Neuroshima Hex universe, to put it bluntly, is similar to the Mad Max universe.
Okay
so post dystopian, you have factions or clans who are all convinced that they are the future of the human race. They have modded vehicles, modded weaponry, and they go at it at each other.
Great.
In this game, it's basically only themed in the Neuroshima Hex universe, but in the end, it is just an engine builder.
Yeah.
And I definitely do not mean to sound dismissive of the game because I absolutely loved it. So just to describe what you have in front of you, what you will have is you will have a board. The board has three rows where you're playing your cards. Top row relates to production. So that's how you get your different resources. Some of the resources are things like weaponry, jerry cans for fuel, gears for
making you stronger,
making things and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
Your second row is called your feature row. And these relate to things such as one-off really powerful abilities.
Right.
Or they may be an ongoing benefit, particularly around guarding your resources. And I'll come back to that in a sec. And the very final row is pretty much about scoring points,
okay,
where it's called your action row. And you basically, you play your action cards and then it gives you additional actions that you can play during the round.
Yep.
So, like I said, most of the actions are around scoring points. Some of them are around sort of like great resource conversion bonuses.
Yeah.
So typically, some resource conversion was converting to certain resources would be rather expensive. These cards make them a lot cheaper. And on your turn, what you were doing one of the available actions to you. Most of the actions can only be taken once,
right,
per turn, and then it's a race.
Are the actions dictated by the cards that you have in your hand, or like are there things that you can just choose to do on the board?
So it's mostly by the cards in your hand and okay, your starting faction ability.
Okay.
So there are six factions in the game and every single faction is asymmetric.
So can you play up to six players or is it
four players before you get six factions.
Okay, that's pretty cool.
Is it one of those games where you just play as two players, really? Like you just play two
players? It is. Yeah. All right. And again, this is one of the comparisons to Wingspan. I'm not gonna keep coming back to Wingspan too much, but I'm just gonna use it as a basis because Wingspan is the darling of the hobby. It definitely has brought in a number of non-gamers into the hobby, and I think it's a good anchor point.
I think I should just very quickly point out if this is the first time that you're hearing about this game called Wingspan, essentially it is a nature themed bird, a bird themed
card game
engine builder. You know, play this bird and then every other bird in this row lays you eggs, and then you can use those eggs to then get more food to get more birds. It's the exact same thing, but it's basically one of the best selling games really of the last 5 years.
If a game ranks in similar lists as Monopoly, it's a hugely successful game.
Yeah.
But again, the comparisons to Wingspan again, there are three rows, just like in Wingspan. You are using resources to play cards, just like in Wingspan.
Yeah.
You are using those cards to take additional actions, just like in Wingspan. The differences here, though, the one thing that I really didn't like about Wingspan is that Wingspan comes with this massive deck, and then the expansions just add to it. You have this huge stack of cards, and it gets really wobbly. So if you're waiting on particular cards, or if you're trying to get an ability to fire off, it's often really difficult to do.
That's actually been my biggest problem with Wingspan is that I can't cycle the deck fast enough to find cards that will actually help me make an engine.
But in 51st State, the deck is much smaller.
Right.
Now, granted, playing it two player, I play this with my son, and we've never actually recycled the deck, but we've gotten very close to getting to the bottom of the deck more than once.
Yep.
Okay. And again, this is just using the base set. We haven't dug into the expansions just yet. But going back to what the actual game is, in the end, it's a race game, okay? Like all good engine builders, it's a case of, is my engine more efficient than your engine? And then where we're going to go. And you play the game until someone reaches 25 points. Once that threshold has been hit, you play out the rest of the round as possible, as much as you can.
As usual.
Yeah, so there's no guarantee that you're going to win once you get to 25. The last game I played yesterday with my son, he got to 25 and I was still on 8.
Okay.
The score finished though 44-42.
Right. Okay.
All right. Because my last round was just banking points like a madman, whereas he was trying to rush towards the end of the game.
Yeah.
Look, it is a fantastic game as far as engine builders go. It's not doing necessarily anything new.
That was my next question, was does this provide anything unique or does it just kind of, you know, tighten up the engine building experience?
I think it doesn't do a great deal of things new, bar maybe two things. So the asymmetric abilities are cool.
Okay.
But there are other games that give you asymmetric abilities such as Race for the Galaxy, particularly with the Ambition expansion. It does that. And I'd argue that does it better.
Do they start with different production qualities at the start of the game? Yes. So very similar to like It's a Wonderful World, etc., that kind of stuff.
However, one thing it does, which is really great, is every single round, whatever resources you haven't spent, they are gone. Resources do not carry from round to round. And this is where the feature cards come in. Some of the feature cards let you bank resources.
Right, okay.
And that's where it can be brutal, because the last thing that makes this unique, and I think what makes it great, is one, but basically the cards, or rather I'm going to say two more things. The cards actually have three uses. You can play cards to your tableau. You can play cards as deals. And what they do, they give you ongoing production bonuses. Sometimes they give you point bonuses every single round.
Yeah. Cool.
Or you can destroy cards, either from your hand or from your opponent's tableau.
So a card that I've put in my tableau that's serving me,
yeah,
you could just destroy it.
And I can destroy it. Yes, bit. That's right.
That's cool.
So like my son did that to me in our first game yesterday. He saw I had one card and he realized it was about to cause a huge explosion. So to set the scene,
yeah, that's awesome.
My economy was heavily based around gears, and I was able to produce from memories. I think it was
many,
six
many
or
gears.
Seven around, which is just an obscene amount. Yeah. I didn't know what I was going to do with them. And then I happened to draft the right card, which basically said, if you just bank gears onto this card, you get 3 points every single time. And even though I could only do that once per round, it didn't matter. This was round two, and it just meant that I was looking at likely 9 or 12 points.
Which sounds like a lot in a 44-point game.
In a game where you want to get to 25, that's huge.
Yeah.
The moment he saw me play it, he just went, yeah, I'm destroying that.
Yeah, yeah.
Immediately. And that was it.
Could you have hidden that from him and just played it later?
In hindsight, I should have.
Okay.
In hindsight, right. I should have waited for him to pass and then played it.
So you, when someone passes, you can still play out your round.
That's right, yes.
So it's you take a turn, I take a turn. Yes. Okay, cool. That's right. Sounds like there's a lot of great decision points to be made.
There really, really is. And again, because I'm going to keep coming back to this, because that deck is so small, because it is small, it doesn't take you very long to get a feel for some of the cards. Mm. And it doesn't shy away from the fact that it is a lot more balanced than other games, so much so that there are duplicates of certain cards because they are that good.
Right.
So why not have more than one of them? And so it just means that it's easier to grok the deck after a couple of games. And yes, it can mean that once you've seen that deck, you then turn around and say, well, I've seen everything the game has to offer. This is where all the little expansions come in.
But I felt like
part of the master set.
Race for the Galaxy a little bit. I felt like there were so many strategies with that, and then that was it.
Yeah, but I do completely agree with you, and it's why I like Race for the Galaxy with the Ambition expansion, where you get the you get additional cards, you get asymmetric powers, but you also get all the gold cards that come with it as well. But yeah, look, 51st State. My son plays it with me. You could absolutely teach it to 8, 9, 10-year-olds, and they would pick it up no problems.
That's really good to hear. I would like to point out to people, if you're like kind of understanding what what an engine builder really is, engine builders are really good gateway games because they generally start with very small decisions. Hey, I don't really have a lot, but my faction ability produces, let's say, gears, like you said, Damien.
Yeah.
Well, if that's the case, well, then I know, all right, maybe I'll focus on some gears to start with. Oh, I've got some gear cards. Maybe I'll make a choice on that. And then I start getting more cards that go, hey, if you have X amount of gears, you get points.
Yeah.
And so you're like, okay, cool, I'll start doing that. And that's why engine builders become very good gateway games, I've found, just for those reasons of like, there are some, like It's a Wonderful World, where they basically say, here are all the decisions, try and make the best of it. But things like Wingspan, things like this one obviously sound like they start small and then ramp up pretty big.
Yeah, good engine builder. It's easy to find two cards that work together, some sort of combo.
Yeah.
And then as you discover that, you feel smart by linking those two things together.
Gizmos is another good engine builder, which I think is really good for that kind of thing.
Definitely, that's a great gateway one.
Even the game that we reviewed last week was at
Little Factory.
That's another example of a really simple engine builder where you are taking cards to then convert to other resources, but ultimately your goal is to then get more cards that will either get you more resources or points.
Listening back on last week's podcast, I really didn't explain it well enough. That's like, hey, you know, if you get a very basic, you know, the idea of the engine building is that you start very basic and then you can follow a tree. And then Little Factory, the advantage that we didn't talk about is the fact that, hey, if you're going to trade that, if if you're like, oh, I can't get that building, it's like, well, then just trade that resource for all of the money and start down a different tree towards those buildings. And yeah. we didn't talk about that, but I think that's...
Yeah, I was going to really... say that, but I didn't listen to it. So
don't worry, you're joining my wife in the podcast that she doesn't listen to that, so it's all fine. Anyway, but that is 51st State, what sounds like a really good engine builder yeah. and a gateway step. We may have to play it one time and maybe introduce that to
you. Yeah. Sorry, just quickly, I said I'm going to swing back to the Master Set. So there's two versions of the game that's available now. The latest Kickstarter is the Ultimate Set that just dropped. You don't need that. It is pretty. It is very expensive. The Master Set comes with, I believe, all but the very latest expansion. That is a ton of game that is available retail. It is also available in the seconds market. Check it out. The original 51st State is out of print, and it's been... rehashed so many times.
Okay.
To the listeners out there who are interested, aim for the Master Set. There are a ton of copies out there.
So why is it called 51st State? Because I keep thinking 51st Dates, and Drew Barrymore's not in this.
I don't know enough about the Neuroshima Hex universe, okay. but it has to do with that.
Because it's really sure weird. I keep hearing 51st Dates in my head as you're saying.
Well, if you know why it's called the 51st State, write it down in the YouTube comments below. Go to our Discord community and write
Hawaii,
in the podcast
Is Hawaii show. The 51st State?
I thought it was Puerto Rico or something like that. Yeah. Like trying to get into something like that. I can't remember.
Let's not get stuck into US politics because I don't say there's...
Let's not get into gray. US politics.
It's very grey.
Look, let's take a sidestep though and let's go away from US politics and the 51st State. But let's go... let's have a chat now on a... just a much bigger game, but we're going to have a smaller chat on it. Let's have a chat, Ralph, about Too Many Bones. You've got your hands on one of the latest content packs or... So you tell me about it. Like you've been playing a bit. Tell the people at home about it as well.
So Too Many Bones, is it a gateway game? Probably
no.
not.
No.
Well, mechanically it's very simple. Mechanically you're just rolling dice.
But it's not a gateway game.
No, it's not. But if you had a gamer show you through it, yeah, you could definitely play it. Yeah. Everyone could play this one.
Yeah.
Who likes dice?
I like dice.
I know, dice are fun. Do you want more dice?
Sure.
You're going to get more dice.
How many more dice?
As you can hold with two hands.
Wow, that's a lot of dice.
I don't think you can hold them all in two hands.
No, you can't. You need a second person.
I've got big hands, you know.
I've seen what you can hold in two hands.
Hey now.
No.
All right, moving on.
Welcome to Too Many Bones. Too Many Bones is a very fun dice chucker. Essentially... it's kind of set in like a fantasy D&D type world. They made up their own sort of realm, but they're Gearlocks. They're in a big realm called Daylor. And essentially, you got to go kill a tyrant, which is a boss. It's a game filled with boss battles. Every boss battle is different. And you have a character that has basic stats. You have your dexterity, which, you know, if it's a 3, it means you're allowed to roll 3 dice per turn.
Ooh.
And you can increase that with skill points, which you earn more skill points as you play the game.
That's that more dice that you were talking
about. You get more dice to put in your hand and throw.
Yep.
It's great. And then you have your attack dice, which basically hits bad guys. You've got defense, which helps you stay alive. And you have health. Everything else, a specialized skill dice that are specific to your character. The base game comes with 4 characters. Personally, I've got Undertow, and recently Damien and I have also got Unbreakable.
Yep.
Are there expansions for the
standalone expansions?
Yeah. Okay.
So they're
cool. Right.
Yeah, so you can just pick up Undertow or Unbreakable and dive straight into this world. Undertow, highly recommend it. It's a very good entry point, I feel.
Yeah.
To
awesome.
But Damien actually introduced this game to me. Do you want to take it from here, Damien, about just explaining skill dice?
Yeah,
as well?
So the skill dice that you have for each gear lock, as Ralph said, it is unique to that gear lock. And the skill dice are wild and is absolutely where the game is. Now, in the base game, you have more so your basic style of gear locks, I'm going to say. So you've got your... you've got your glass cannon.
You've got your tank. You've got your rogue.
You've got your tank-ish character. You've got your medic, and you've got your
demolition
grenadier
expert.
Sort of thing.
I love that one.
I love how you say that's basic. That doesn't sound very basic.
They're fine.
Yeah, you've got the tank, the rogue, and the grenadier.
Yeah, basically,
the artificer in the background.
The grenadier is a ton of fun. Just like, she's probably my favorite in the box.
She's my favorite.
She's the hardest to get going.
Right, okay.
She's got her own little mini game to it.
Yeah.
A lot of them do. A lot of all the characters have their own little mini games.
Yeah, and basically the skill dice will give you typically they either give you an immediate effect. So for instance, the medic will say, okay, you roll the dice and you get anything from a miss all the way up to a heal two. So you heal either yourself or one of the other gear locks two. Great. All the way down to if you happen to, I think the Grenadier, she has a die where she rolls it, she immediately gets to make a fortunate discovery, which is she gets one of her consumable dice. And again, so you have to roll this dice to then allow you to unlock another dice.
Right.
And if you do that, then you're rolling. You
then you
laughing.
Get the multi-dice. Yeah, multi-dice.
You literally do. You literally do with her. So the skills on these gear locks are absolutely mental in some
it's
cases.
It's where the fun is in the game, for sure.
Where, just quickly, where I mentioned with the miss, that's kind of where the game Too Many Bones, also the name of the game, Too Many Bones, comes from. The miss are bones on the dice. The cool thing that I do love about this game, though, is that a miss is not a dead roll.
Yep.
A miss is something that you can then bank. And again, each gear lock has different abilities. But if you can bank all the way up to six of them, you get to upgrade your gear lock. So.
What I really like about it is like you might go to attack this bad guy with like four attack dice and do complete misses. But hey, they actually go into your, like Damien said, your bank, which is your backup plan. And then each gear lock has their unique abilities.
The
they
bank
can
of
trigger.
Bones.
Pretty yeah. much. Yeah.
The so bank. This is basically the game that put Chip Theory games on the market.
I would say it's their most successful.
It's their most successful.
Is this the one
it's
that
their
this
second
the
one, game?
The, I know it's not their first, but I would say this is the one that shot them into like.
Oh yeah, yeah.
This all sounds mean, but I say board game designer relevancy, if you will, like because it basically meant that as soon as Burn Cycle came out, like into Kickstarter, everyone on the back of Too Many Bones or like was basically like, yeah, let's like whatever it is. I think it really does help. Not I wouldn't say relevancy, but it's like, you know, their whole thing is like.
Let's come back to this. So this is a good
discussion. This is a really good discussion because there's a couple things to unpick there. But
okay,
yeah, Too Many Bones. Look, I love it. I had it in my top five in the top 100. I don't regret that, even though it didn't get me many votes.
That's fine.
It's a game that I play.
Can I just point out to the people, if you've never actually seen what the game actually looks like, though, so your character, they're all poker chips. And so you're, if I'm wrong here, but your health is
so basically
relevant by your stack of poker chips. Like the higher the stack, the more health that you have and you move your pile of poker chips around.
Which I do have to say, so the base game, it does come with these specialized poker chips, which are red for your health. And you put all the characters and monsters in the stacks of poker chips. I like the game so much, I've recently upgraded to the premium poker chips, which is just premium red ones. And let me tell you, Damien, I threw the rule book on top of the battle mat and nothing spilled over.
Wow. Yeah, so the red poker chips, they're not weighted chips. They're actually just plastic tokens for health. And they're not garbage, but they're not as nice as the poker chips.
But
you still play the game. I played the game for a long time.
Yeah. I agree. No, it's just to kind of give people an idea of what you're looking at. Generally, mistake me if I'm wrong for what I know, is that the battle, the arenas that you're battling the boss in, they're like a 4x4 grid. Is that correct? Or a 5x5
grid?
Yeah,
4x4.
Yes.
4x4 grid. Yeah, and then you have a stack. Yeah. And so your character and the enemy characters are on different locations in that 4x4 grid. And your character, you'll have tokens with piles that represent your health, and then you're doing things, you're moving around the arena using your special abilities and basically trying not to die.
Pretty much. So you have encounters in the game.
Mm-hmm.
Most encounters are a battle of some kind, and each battle is different in some way in the way it's sort of set up. So
it is a campaign game?
Not a campaign game.
I should say like a dungeon crawler in the sense of like you have different like dungeons that you can go and take on sort of thing? Or?
I wouldn't say that.
No, I wouldn't. Look, campaign game it can be. There are campaigns for it, and I say that plural because there are.
Yes.
So for instance, in Undertow, the first standalone expansion, there was a campaign in the box.
Okay.
Cool. In the base game, you could buy Age of Tyranny, which was an expansion, and that turned the game into a campaign.
Okay.
Where you actually carry wounds from
to
round.
You can take four training points
with you right.
to so the next one.
I guess for a video gamer, then I guess the closest comparison would kind of be maybe like a Diablo or there can be a story here, but really you get in, you go into your encounter, smash monsters.
It really is Diablo the board game. But the thing I love about it is that unlike other campaign games that I've played in the past. All right. Even though I really like the flavor text on the cards, I enjoy reading it. I know it's not for everyone because because the way you set up an encounter, or rather
a battle
or what's the correct term? A campaign, if you will.
An encounter, okay? Or like a
Is that you literally pick a tyrant, you pick a boss.
Okay.
And then that'll give you details as to what types of units you're stacking. These are the units that you're
basically
going to fight.
Basically, sounds like your dungeon delving sort of thing.
It is every turn or every day. So the game's played in days.
Yeah,
fair enough. But you draw a card, you read out the flavor text, and that's the part where it's not for everyone. But you can flip the card around and tells you how to set up the battle. And sometimes you make a choice and you pick what sort of battle you're facing. You'll do the battle. Round takes maybe 10 minutes. You kill everything. If you're successful, you gain the rewards. You get loot, which is typically pretty powerful. You can get trove loot, which you can pick lock. And if you lock pick it, you get an even more incredible loot. And then you get a progress point. Okay, so the progress point is saying, yes, I successfully did that encounter.
Cool.
To face your tyrant, the big boss, you need 5 or 7.
Okay.
And then you can face him whenever you want.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and you have to do it within a certain time frame as well. So, because every battle represents a day, it also means that that's the amount of time you have to spec up your gear lock.
Okay.
Okay. And then on the last day, you have to face the boss.
Tyrant, yeah.
And it also means you only get one shot at the tyrant. So the best analogy I can think of for that. I'm going to show my age here. But for any of our listeners who had a Super Nintendo and played games like Chrono Trigger, where you could go and face the final boss straight away.
I just want to say the new Gear Lock Figment has a dice that's called Chrono Trigger.
That's I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah.
So Chrono Trigger was the first game.
Game. Zelda games allow you to do that too. You can walk right in again, Ganondorf's castle and just go fight him
but
if you want.
This is the original.
I've played Chrono Trigger. Yeah. I know.
And you're probably going to die. But you know what? You could also finish the game in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Okay. And Too Many Bones gives you that feeling. But it's not the same.
So who would you say that this game is for then, right? That can be a bit of a loaded question, but as it's not really a gateway game and we may have some people listening is why would they, they probably already know why they would enjoy this game, but what is it specifically that you guys really enjoy about this game? And I guess, why should someone really try it, I guess?
I do want to say it. Like, I had the luxury of going over Damien's house a few years ago, and he taught me through the game. Okay, if it's a game I picked up off the street, I would have struggled to learn it myself.
Mm-hmm.
But having someone go through it, it made that game accessible. So if you have that opportunity, if you're not a gamer and someone's playing it, don't be afraid by the size of the box. It really is just fun throwing the dice. Uh-huh. Yeah,
and I would say, look, cost aside, because it is a very expensive
game. Oh, we don't talk about that.
Oh, look,
also the reason why I would say it's not a gateway game, because it is expensive. It's like $250+.
It can be. I got lucky. I got it for a lot less than that. But
depending on how many things someone has got in it and all the upgrades.
If you are looking at this game and the cost hasn't completely frightened you, I will say the rulebook is terrible.
Oh, yeah.
However, there are a ton of guides online. There are a ton of videos. Oh. YouTube is fantastic. But as far as campaign games go, I would argue it's one of the most accessible campaign games because there isn't a massive setup. There is very, very little overhead once you understand the base rules and once you understand how your gear lock works.
Mm-hmm.
You can easily run 2 gear locks on your own and you can synergize between the two of them very, very easily.
Mm-hmm.
The admin overhead is very low.
Mm-hmm.
And I would argue the only other game that I can think of that is a campaign game that has a fantasy-esque theme that is I'd actually argue it's not lower overhead, but it's comparable, is Jaws of the Lion. that's the only other campaign game that I would say
Jaws of the Lion, which yeah, is the if standalone.
And again,
mini,
they are very different games.
Very different games.
But if you're looking for a campaign game, they are the two that I would point people towards.
Okay.
If you love rolling dice, if you really get a kick out of that, and the price hasn't scared you, Too Many Bones is great.
I would
strongly recommend it to anyone.
I will say the amount of custom dice that this game has does look really cool.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think each Gearlock has, 16 custom dice, I believe.
Up to 16. There's a couple that have less.
Yeah.
But, like, for instance, there's one, the Seriffle, like I was showing you on the weekend. I think it's only got 6 or 8, but yeah, it also gives you that, like, you get the fanciest deck of cards I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, basically,
life,
there's a Gearlock, which is basically Gambit from X-Men.
Basically, yeah, pretty much. So, yeah. So, look, it's, there is so much variability in the game. There are a ton of Gearlocks. The game is definitely in the Gearlocks. Like, you could play the same campaign over and over and over with different Gearlocks and have different experiences.
Yep.
Which I'm really happy because recently, like, Damien and I backed Unbreakable a couple of years ago.
Yep.
Which is the new standalone expansion for it, which comes with two new Gearlocks. So I haven't dived in too much into that yet, but I basically added up some more Gearlocks during that time. So I've been waiting for a couple of years for this package to arrive.
Well, so, hopefully you'll invite me around to
we'll have a game.
Come, let me play, because I have been very interested in that system.
Yeah, it's awesome.
All right, well, that was Too Many Bones by Chip Theory Games. But we're going to now move on to the final game, which I want to have a quick chat about because I've played it again, and every time I play it, I just love it. I'd like to have a quick chat about Beyond the Sun. Have either of you two played this game at all?
I love Beyond the Sun.
I have seen it. I haven't played it. Do you own it?
I don't own it. It is on my wish list to get, but I will ask you a question. Hey, you know, you've played Civilization-style games, haven't
yes.
you? Okay, cool. What's your favorite part of Civilization-style games?
Restarting the game.
Restarting the tech tree. That's yes. the right answer, Ralph. Well done. The tech tree and the Civilization stuff. No, so Beyond the Sun is basically what is affectionately referred to as Tech Tree the game.
Yeah.
Because the main concept of this game is that it is a worker placement game crossed with a little bit of area control and a bit of resource management, kind of not a lot of it. But the main concept of the game is that we have this massive tech tree board, which starts with 4 different like level 1 powers, and you only have one worker. You can move your worker from these basic spaces, and then these technologies, you can research them to activate the ability on the card. The ability to move your worker onto that card to activate the ability that you have.
Yep.
And then you have level 1 abilities, level 2, level 3, and bonker level 4 abilities. But to get access to those abilities, you have to research all the things before it. So imagine like a big, you know, like almost like a big pyramid funneling you. You can really start specializing because one end of it will be science related, one will be like area control related, one will be resource related, and then you can kind of mix and match these technologies and to kind of start, you know, specializing your corporation. So the game is a worker placement game, but as I said, you only have one worker, so you have to make a choice each turn. What do I want to do? Do I want to do an ability to get the area control? Because as I said, there's this little area control game going on the side of the board where we essentially have to turn little production cubes into either spaceships or people.
People, yeah.
And you can turn people into spaceships. Don't ask me how
that's the weirdest part of the game.
Don't ask me how that resource conversion works, but you can turn.
And you can turn. There are some cards that let you turn spaceships
back into people. It's really weird. There are three different resources in the game. Or then there's basically these little cubes, which are just resources, they refer to it as. And then you can turn those into people or spaceships, right?
Are they robots?
Yeah, probably.
Because that makes a bit of sense. Yeah, if it's like a piece of metal.
It's basically androids, but
Transformers are morphing.
The icon looks like a person, so therefore, just like the image it conjures up is that you can turn people, right? But this, like, there's a game. So what you're trying to do is you have a board. That board allows you to take certain amount of ore and certain amount of these resource cubes every turn. You're trying to then keep up because you can only get access to certain amounts of them by doing either researching enough the technology that allows you to, or taking control of planets and this area control thing, because those will give you basically, you know, more production, more resource.
And sometimes there are objectives.
And sometimes that, yeah, they give you victory points, yeah, right? But the
sometimes. Objectives.
But the big points.
Why is there objectives sometimes?
Sorry, on the planets. Some, yeah, planets, oh, okay, yeah, some planets may say, hey, if you have this one, this is worth 5 VP if blank.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, there are some, like, depending on how the objectives randomly come out,
mm-hmm,
none of them may be related to the planets.
But the big points come from if you can actually research the level 4 techs, they are worth mega points and big, like, game breaking, rule breaking sort of things. And so this game, I don't really want to talk about it too much longer because I do want to go into a bit of an in-depth dive of this later. But Damo, this game is one of those ones where it's like, it really feels weird at the start, because when you start researching tech, you're like, oh, I can have access to any tech. And it's like, nah, you don't have access to every tech. You really need to actually start actually thinking about how you do it, because
can you give me an example of a tech card?
So it may say, hey, you can actually spend four ore to research any level 3 technology.
Yeah.
Right? That's really big. Now I must say, the one thing that I haven't actually pointed out is that when I the level 2, 3, and 4 technologies don't start face up on the board. Okay. When I go to research a level 2 tech, they give me 2 cards of the color technology that I want, blue, green, red, or yellow, depending on where I am. So if I've gone from the level 1 blue, the level 2 must have the color blue in there at some point because we're just continuing on. But I get to then choose one of those 2 technologies and put it face up. Yep. And I'm saying I now immediately have made this technology. And now, but anyone else who at the table, they can start to research up that same track and get access to the technologies that I, have made available.
You do get a bonus for researching the technology.
You do want to be first, yeah, but you do open it up so now everyone else can go, ooh, that
like
really
they saw that synergy.
That's right, yeah. And the other advantage, look, I can't remember the name of the card. It's been a little while since I played. But for instance, there are basic actions which allow you to do a one-to-one conversion.
It's like a terraforming. There's terraforming, resource conversion, simple. All this
but
kind of stuff.
But you may have text that will say, you can do that as a 1-to-2 and put a spaceship out. Okay. So that's really where the value in a lot of the technology cards are. It's, again, coming back to what we were talking about earlier, it's all about improving your engine.
Yes.
And finding the right path in technologies, because sometimes, depending on the objective, you need to actually split your path. And that, to me, that's where the game gets really hard, is when you're forced to research 2 different trees at the same time.
Yep.
Also, timing is a big thing because every technology isn't actually accessible by everyone at the same time. Yep. Like, it may only have 1 space. So you can never keep researching the same thing over and over again. You have to always go around the board. So if you leave, you open up that space for someone to go and research and, like, use the power, and you may not be able to come back to it.
I will say, like, I liked the game, but the first time I played it, I bounced off it.
Me too.
Had nothing to do with the game itself. Had to do with the iconography. It didn't make any sense to me. Again, that whole thing, spaceships can become people.
Yeah.
But then also, you have a look at your player board, and I remember asking, why do I have stars and litter boxes? Because to me, that's what it looked like.
I went, why do I have the Imperial logo from Star Wars and a weed symbol? Like, as if we're about to get smoke pot. Like, legitimately, it looks like a weed
smoke
leaf.
Smoke pot on what Star Wars?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's where I bounced off the game. But I got to play it again on BGA. Got a couple pointers on how to play, because it turns out that when I was taught the game, it was at a game day. I was also helping out and stuff, yep, so I was kind of in and out. So I missed a bunch of the rules, but
that would have been fun.
as you do. But I did really like the game. I really enjoyed it. The fact that the tech tree is not set gives you.
So is it a random draw every
time? It
is,
yeah. Okay. Yeah.
But for example, if I have to draw, like I said, I have to draw, if I'm going up the blue side, I would draw a card, and if there's no blue symbol, that goes onto the bottom of the deck. So there's level 1 deck, sorry, level 2
okay,
deck.
Okay, so there's specific blue.
That's
right.
Yes.
So I have to keep drawing until, like, they could be multicolored. So I could have a blue and a yellow, but so long as it has the color of the technology before it, then that's one of the 2 cards I can select, and then I keep drawing for the second one. I look at them, and then I can go, okay, I want this one because it's maybe it's better for me now, or maybe I place that one because I'm trying to tempt my enemies into going up that tech tree and
you can totally hate draft for level 3 and level 4 decks.
I just I just had a thought in my head playing a game of Twilight Imperium. However, your opponent, one of your opponents, randomly pick whatever tech you get.
We've done that. It crippled me.
No, that's the strategy card. Tech like gravity drive, the color, the tech tree, and that. Like someone else gives you something.
She's pissed me off. Anyway, the reason why I just wanted to bring it up though is because I really like this game. It really tickles my brain in a way. Like I'm not really spending a lot of time on the area control of this game because it's not really the selling point. The selling point is the tech tree.
It's like viticulture area control. You can forget about that.
It is a main concept of the game, and it does actually mean that you can get victory points earlier in the game because you can actually like colonize planets, which then force you to draw another planet. So like if you're on it, you can have a bonus specific for right now, or you can colonize it, which means you take the card and then you get a permanent bonus that only you have access to for the rest of the game.
Yeah,
but then you lose some of your production that you were banking on from that world. You know, there's things going on there, but I really dig it. I want to play it some more, but it is one of those games that is very white. It, as you said, it's like.
What does that mean?
There's almost no artwork.
You know how Hansa Teutonica. This is as white.
That's beige.
No, that's what I'm saying. This is as white as Hansa Teutonica is beige.
So,
it's very.
It's
white.
Honestly.
It sounds weird, but if
I just imagine this random black guy overseas is playing the game, and he's like, "What do you mean it's white?"
If you spat out a generic chart out of Excel,
okay,
you'd get this game.
That's what it looks like.
Okay.
It looks like an Excel
spreadsheet. How long does this game take?
About an hour and a half.
Like a mid to heavy game.
Look, first playthrough can go long if you don't understand the concepts and there's a lot of stuff going on here, but you can knock out a game easy in 90 minutes.
It's, this or Guile?
Gaia Project.
Gaia.
But they are completely different games. Yeah. They are completely different things.
Fair enough.
I would say that don't play it at 2.
No, you need 3. You need people challenging on area control.
Like, because they're a lot of the techs only have one spot.
Okay.
Or
so that doesn't change per player count.
No.
Okay.
No. Right. And although they'll have things like they'll have 2 spots, but the second spot, and only some cards have this, but the second spot
cost you an arm to do it.
Is like it will cost you an arm.
So I feel like that's an easy thing to adjust per player count. They can say if you're playing a 3 player game, every tech has 2 spots. Like
I don't know.
I would say optimal is 3. You can play it at 4, but unless you've got 4 people who are really confident in the game, it could push long and it can feel like maybe you have a lot of downtime. But 3 player would zip by. I highly recommend this game. Damon and I really enjoy it. I really want to play it with you guys because I think it's again.
Is this on Board Game Arena?
It is on Board Game Arena, and actually that was the first time I ever played it, but then I didn't get to play it in person ages ago. But it was only like a half game. But I'm like, then I started playing another game on BGN. I'm like, I've got to talk about this game because it's so good. But like I said, if you do enjoy the research or the tech, like this research and action, worker placement, it is really good. It's actually just really good in general.
It is. Yeah. Look,
it's not decisive. It's the one where you either love it or you hate it. It is really not
polarizing.
You're polarizing. That's what it is.
So it's polarizing white.
Yes, pretty much. It, like, if you shine a light on it, you could blind yourself.
Like, you can go to the paint section in Bunnings and see it in the chart.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just oversaturated. That's all it is, you know.
Absolutely.
Too much light.
All right, well, look, let's get away from that. Let's go. We've talked some heavy games. Let's talk some light games. Let's get into our board game. I've done this 3 weeks in a row. I say our board game of the week. It's not our board game of the week. It's our gateway game of the week.
Is it even a board game, though? It's cards.
It's a card game. In the board game section, we're going
to
be talking
there's
about...
There's a token. You have...
There are
have
tokens. Yeah,
tokens.
But there is no board. But then, it is literally... Again, we did this 2 weeks ago with Ra, but having this... There you go. We're going to be talking about the one, the only love letter. Love letter is an absolute...
We'll drop it on the table.
Yeah, please do. It's not as satisfying. Not as satisfying as Ra, I tell you that much. That one even less so. So if you don't know about Love Letter is an absolute classic card game that plays minimum 2 players up to 4 players.
Yeah. New one's a 6, by the way.
It is. And we will be talking about the one that we have here that I was gifted by my lovely co-host Christmas last year, which was the Love Letter Jabba's Palace Star Wars standalone one, which is really cool. So we'll talk about that. But to give you an idea of what love letter is. It's a very basic card game in which you, on your turn, everyone gets given one card, and those cards can be different characters. Those characters are either different things such as the guard, the priest, the baron, the handmaid, the prince, the king, the countess, and the princess. And the aim of the game is to get through an entire round and have the highest card in your hand. So the princess is worth 8, the countess is worth 7, so on and so forth. There's a few more down to the guard, which is worth number 1. So if you can make it through to the end of the round, with the highest card, you get 1 victory cube. First person to 5 victory cubes is the winner. However, there is a few rubs here. The rubs, such as you can be eliminated out of the round. How so, you ask? Well, there is a card such as the guard, the lowliest number guard. He has an ability that when you play the guard face down, that's not the guard, that's the baron. When you play the guard face down, you may guess another player's hand. And if you guess successfully, they have to show it face up and they are out of the round. But how would I know what's in their hand, I hear you asking? Well, we've got other cards, such as the baron, which I just played, allows you to secretly change hands with another player. Or the
The baron doesn't change hands.
Sorry, the king.
No, the
king
baron. The sorry, baron the king. Is you compare, you pick a player.
Oh, and you look at your cards.
You show each other the card, and whoever has the lowest number, they're eliminated from the game.
That's right. Sorry, that is correct. Sorry. The king allows you to trade hands with someone else. So you can go, ooh, if you look, think they've got a good card.
The cards basically say in very clear English what it does. Like, you can look at someone's hand and, you know, take a guess.
Yeah. On your turn, though, all you do is you simply pick up a card. So you'll have 2 cards in your hand, and you have to play one of them to discard. Discard in this game just simply means play the card down in front of you. So, for example, the princess, the highest card, she can never be discarded, because if you discard her, you immediately lose the round. You're out of the round. So you always, so if you pick her up, you have to keep her in your hand. So the game becomes this little bit of a bluffing slash kind of strategy move where you're just playing cards in specific ways, trying to guess other cards, trying to look at your player's hands, you know, try to protect yourself and then get through the game. It's very light, very simple. I really do like this game.
There's a couple of ways to win. You can just knock everyone else out,
which has happened a lot of the time. If you could just be lucky and just go, yeah, you've got the handmaid.
Or whoever's got the highest card at the end in their hands, they win.
Yeah.
One card is always out of the game, so you never know. Like, for example, if no one's shown the countess
or the princess,
it may not be in your game. The most complicated rule there is the countess card, because it says if you have the card in your hand and you also have the king or the prince, you have to play the countess. So I found some new players struggle with the countess a little bit.
Yeah.
Or like if I play the countess down, people might not understand what that means.
And the reason why they struggle is because it says you have to play the countess if you have the prince or king.
Yep.
But there's nothing stopping you from playing the countess even if you don't.
And that's where the bit of bluffing comes into it, which is that you can have a strategy where you could pick up something completely random, like the princess, for example, and just throw the countess down and go, you know, and people go, ooh, he had, or you could even have a guard in your hand and just go, I'm going to throw the, I'm going to try and guess what your hand is. Yeah, so that does allow people to start getting sneaky with it after a repeat plays.
It is fun when like 3 players have tried to guess a particular person's hand by playing a guard, and then it gets to you and you play the guard and you're like, you know what? We've had 3 guesses on you already. I'm going to try and get the next one and try and knock you out. And if you do it, like even if you do it first go, you can play the guard and try and knock someone out first go. That's just so fun.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's really simple. It plays, each round plays in less than 3-4 minutes.
Right? Oh, yeah. Yeah.
3-4. Like, because there's only like 16 cards total in the deck or something like
and,
that.
And there's no teach. Like, it's like literally everyone gets dealt one card and you basically tell everyone at the table, on your turn, draw a card. And then read the 2 cards in front of you, do a thing.
Play
one card. Yeah, that's it.
Exactly right.
It's so simple. And for that.
As you heard us jingle the baggies. I was about to say jingle the sacks. I'm like, that doesn't sound good. But jingle the baggies in front of out. There they are. Like, that literally is.
Jingle that sack, bro.
I'll jingle the sacks.
There they are. But like, you can literally take those and like put them in your pocket. And
I've taken these to many pubs.
Yeah, so have I. Like, it's a perfect like travel game.
It goes to like family barbecues and things. And you know, after everyone eats, you know, there's cousins that play Love Letter all the time as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyway, so that will lead us into where it's the one that we've gotten, which I actually really enjoy. So we've got Star Wars Jabba's Palace, which is essentially the Star Wars love letter equivalent. And what it does is, if you're a Star Wars nut like me, it basically takes the exact same game and adds in a few extra features. So the first thing that it adds in is these location cards. It basically changes up the...
How you win the
winning condition of the game. So you've got the standard, you know, highest card at the end of the round, but then you've also got the person who has the highest rebel card, or maybe the highest palace card. Ooh, those sound different because they are. So of the 16 cards, there are 8 of each. Sorry, they're actually less. There's actually 7 character cards of each, and they're of the rebels.
There's two factions.
Yeah, two factions, the rebels and the palace. So the rebels are people that you'd remember, like Luke Skywalker, Leia, Lando, Chewie, R2, Han, and C-3PO, actually the main cast. And then you've got people on the palace side, such as Jabba, the Rancor, Boba Fett, Bib Fortuna, Mercenary, Salacious Crumb, and Guard. I love how they don't really have named characters for the palace. They're just like,
I feel like they stretched it a little bit, didn't they?
Mercenary. Like, they could have had IG-88 or something like that.
Extras 5.
Yeah, absolutely. But there's two different factions, but they don't really change anything, to be honest, because the rules does say, they have different abilities. What I meant by that is the premise of the game is still the most part of the same.
So
there's there's nothing better or worse about having a palace or a, you know, rebel card, but it does change, such as, you know, Jabba the Hutt says, hey, you can eliminate a rebel, so you have to call out that rebel. But Luke Skywalker says, hey, you get to eliminate a palace person.
I love C-3PO, where you guess, it's like the guard where you guess someone's hand, but if you're wrong, they get a chance to knock you out and guess your hands. It's so risky. I love
Damo's favorite's the Rancor, which is always a really fun one, which is you eliminate the lowest card, but you have to start a count up from one.
I did like that. It's like, you go one, and then you wait, two.
Yeah, it creates that time block.
And everyone's like, oh, please, someone say they're out. Please, someone say they're out. I will say the other advantage of Star Wars Palace, Jabba's Palace, is it actually plays up to 6 players now, not 4, which is really cool. So the fact
that is because it's kind of the reskin of Love Letter. If you buy Love Letter off the shelf now, it does go to 6.
Does it?
It does. Oh, that's cool. Even like other versions of Love Letter, there's like the Infinity Gauntlet, the Thanos one. That's a version as well. But the Jabba's Palace one is highly recommended.
Yeah, look, if you like Marvel, check out the Thanos one. If you like Star Wars, check this one out. But even the base game of Love Letter as well, it is cheap. It's like $15. It literally fits, you know, in your hand, in your pocket. It's just this little bag with some cubes. I took this camping with, and we literally just one evening just had it on like a little side table whilst we were around the fire. It was just like perfect. It was just like really easy to pull out, really easy to play, really easy to just.
My sleeves would have melted.
Yeah.
Well, they didn't have the plastic sleeves on it at the time. Oh, okay. Yeah. To be honest, those ones, they probably can.
I was wondering why your cards are lemonade.
I actually need to work out what version of Love Letter I got, because I got Love Letter as like a freebie one time when I bought Cosmic Encounter secondhand. Someone just said, here, have Love Letter as well. All right, so I took it. Mine didn't come in a pouch. Mine came in a box.
Yeah.
So I've never seen the pouch or anything like that.
Yeah, I've got the pouch one.
Well, my one, the pouch doesn't, it's not just in the pouch. Like, it comes in like one of the, you know, the plastic,
this is a cardboard box. I've got to work out what version I've got.
Look, if I'm going to be honest, like, I would, I'd prefer to have the Star Wars one, just because I think the powers are a little bit more interesting than the base letter. They definitely are.
I love how it goes to 6, and I have played it at 6 a few times. There are moments where 2 or 3 people can be knocked out in the one hit.
Yeah.
So it does create that. The game doesn't go any longer.
Well, because one of the powers in the Star Wars one says, don't name a character, name a number. And if multiple people have that number, then they're out. So you could say, is anyone number 4? And three people around the table could literally go, right,
I'm out. So there is, it does mean that there is player elimination, but the games are so short.
Yeah, they take 3 minutes.
Sub 5 minutes easily.
Well, that's the thing, which is when we say player elimination, obviously you knocked out of the game, but like, you're not knocked out of the game, just knocked out of the round.
Yeah.
Because the round is 16 cards and plays in less than 3 minutes, it's like, this is the perfect example of player elimination, which is Also, when you knock a player out, the game becomes much quicker because it's like there's only just me and you. So, away we go, bump, 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 and we're still down to two players, and then game's over.
And then when someone wins, you get a token, and typically it's four tokens you win, but it does adjust per player count. What I love about this Jabba's Palace version, though, is there's different ways you can win, which Nate touched on already. But typically, it's the highest value card. If, you know, at the end of the round, you're holding number eight, you typically win. But there's other ways you can play. Some of them, you have to have the highest sum of cards played in front of you.
Mm.
So everyone's playing their high value cards, and it just changes the dynamic of the game altogether.
There's also the Han Solo card in the Star Wars variant, which he basically says, hey, if you just end the round with him in your hand, grab an extra token. So in the battle for five tokens, you may be tempted to just keep him in your hand. And
it's great for a higher player count too.
Yeah. I will say that's very thematic because it's very him locked in Carbonite. Like he doesn't get to play, he's just in Carbonite. And if you do, you get
on the card?
Yeah. And the reason
Carbonite.
And the reason why it's worth saying that you do get an extra point or an extra token if you do win with him is that he is the lowest value card in the game. He's literally worth zero. So if you manage to finish the round it with him in your hand, it means that you are the last person standing.
Which you did.
Yes. And if you can pull that off, it's two tokens. You're halfway to
Well, that's if you're the last person standing. You know,
it's in the a six only player way you can game.
No, you can still win. No, so if I had number eight and you had zero, we will both get a token.
Well, the thing is,
okay.
But you could do what you did, which is you played the Rancor holding Han Solo in your hand, knock out everyone else, and you're like, oh, I'm the only one remaining with Han Solo. Congratulations. I will say these tokens that come with the Star Wars one, they're just opulent for the sake of being opulent.
Yeah, they're really
like
good.
They're really nice, don't get me wrong, but there's no need for them to be screen printed.
Yeah, I can't wait for you to see too many bones.
I've said this in previous podcasts, there is something to be said about having nice things, and I get that, right? It's like, you know, the base love letter is just these red cubes. Literally, I just leave them in the bag. I'm like, yeah, we don't really care. But it's like, you know, just keep your points. But these ones, like, you know,
I always play with the red cubes for love letter because, you know, a round takes 2-3 minutes, but if you're sitting on three cubes and someone else is sitting on three cubes, there's that tension and you start playing with the cubes in front of you.
Yeah.
So I like the tactility of just a cube.
Mm.
I know it's not, we don't call it a resource in this game. It's my token of affection.
Companion cube.
Oh, God, we nearly got through an entire one, Ralph.
What it's actually called in the game.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
It's a token of affection. So we're all trying to give the princess, we're trying to win her love. With her courtship.
Yes, yes.
And when you win, you give her a letter and she gives you a token of affection. And if you have four tokens of affection, you win over the princess.
Well, look, you'll have to forgive me
because Star Wars doesn't have that.
Puns and you've been known for throwing out the best puns in the game. So, look, yeah.
May I surprise you sometime?
You do.
Maybe I've matured.
No chance.
No.
Well, we'll have to see. You know. Anyway, look, I think we're going to bring it to the end there. This has been a fun one, guys. I really enjoyed that. No discussion topic week this week, ladies and gentlemen. But next week is a very special one. Our next podcast, episode 40. It is our one-year anniversary podcast coming up episode
exciting.
40. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I don't really know what we got planned for it yet, but we will hopefully try and have as many of the hosts in as we possibly can for this particular one. I would like to point out something new, which is that we are now breaking up the podcast into little bite-sized segments for YouTube. So if you want to go and you just want to listen to a specific game or you don't have the time to listen to the whole thing, you can head over to our YouTube channel at BG Gateway and you will be able to actually search for the specific highlighted segments. You can also, as I said at the beginning, jump around just to the timestamps in your podcasting app of choice and actually on the YouTube app itself, click on the timestamp and it will take you to that particular part of the podcast. But more so, I'd like to thank these two lovely gentlemen for once again joining me around the microphones and talking about this hobby that we do.
I do want to give one shout out as
please do.
Just a thank you to the Board Game Barbecue crew. They had us on to their Board Game Awards. We announced some nominees. We did the announcement of the light game genre for the light game award, which Cat in the Box ended up taking, by the way.
Yeah, Cat in the Box got the Board Game Barbecue's and best light game for 2022. So congratulations
to them. So if you're here from the barbecue crew or like come to check us out, thank you and hope to see you again.
Yeah, and look, thank you very much for letting us. We love that. We love having your company here. You can find us on all your podcasting apps of choice, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, also on YouTube. It's all there as well. If you have any comments, leave them down in the comment sections down below. Also, go and join our Facebook community, Facebook and Discord community, because we've actually starting to grow those. We post all the video notifications on there. We actually have a few good discussions going on at the moment.
Yeah, just come chat.
Board game, arena game, postings, all that kind of stuff. Come play, come chat. We'd love to have you guys there. But until next week, 1 year anniversary podcast next week. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you next time. Bye.
Game on.
Bye.
Game on.
We should do that. We should put our hands in the sand and go game on.
I don't mean it, but I don't know if I love it.
We'll work on it. Maybe there's something there.
I prefer for you like more like a double dare.
Yeah.
A double dare. A physical challenge.
He's showing his age again.
Yeah. It'll almost be like Takeshi's Castle. You know.
No. Oh, well, kind of, but for kids.
Yes, I know.
But.